I don't know if you realized it, but like while I was counting down, you did like a little kind of like cricking the neck motion. And you're like, oh, Nick's getting ready.
I'm getting ready to podcast.
I'm ready to lock in.
Yeah. I guess like before we get into anything, I have just become aware of the 2026 World Cup song. Have you heard it?
Do you know, I feel like it has been played in my presence a couple of times because I think it's become a bit of a meme. But also, I think, okay, context, something I've learned very recently.
You don't know what the World Cup is.
At Irish weddings, a sleeper hit of a song to play is the Get Ready for Africa Shakira World Cup song.
That's a good World Cup song, though, even though it's entirely stolen.
I know, but like, yeah, it just literally just, I was in rural Yorkshire, and then just someone from like, that I knew from primary school comes up to me and is like, Kieran, are you ready for Africa? And I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Do you want to see me dance?
It's Island Rhythms. I may or may not be familiar with this new song. Tell me about it.
It is exact. Like I had heard it
for America.
That would be good, but no. It couldn't be any worse. It really, like, I assume that then that our listeners have probably already heard this. I'm very late to this. I didn't realize.
If they haven't, they can pause and go listen.
Yeah. True Trumpian, just nothing, not like, not even that then time is a flat circle. American culture is a flat circle. Nothing's real. It's a Jelly Roll did the song.
Oh.
Just, archetype of a failed rapper turned country star. That is the, like, you know, it is the quintessential American MAGA staple. Is that then? I couldn't, as a white man, I couldn't cut it in black culture, so I'm reverting back to just a different version of black culture that has been taken over by white people. I thought it was an AI song at first. It's so bad. It's just like, hey, hey, whoa, hey, whoa, hey. Whoa,
hey, it could have been written by AI.
Something like that.
I mean, that happens, like, where people, like, if it sounds like an AI song, but you know it's being performed by real people.
It's probably
it's
an AI.
It's still possible it was written by AI. And then
100%. And then the thing that's very funny then, too, to make it, you know, global, because, you know, it's the World Cup is the United States. Canada
for America.
And Mexico. There's like
Canada.
There's like two lines in Espanol, and that's it. But it's still done in the hey ho hey hey ho. It is so bad. I can't, like I said, I thought that this was fake. Also, them not being very global, there's no French verse. How dare they?
That's the Olympics, I feel like. The Olympics is when you have to acknowledge, like, the French exists.
No,
like,
no, but Canada.
Oh. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, see, no, I'm not making just a point about them, like, they forgot the French.
You want... Ben, don't check out my trash mobile. No.
That's the best fucking video. Yeah. I need to find that. I need to find that person again and follow them because I love, like, Quebecois best French. You can't tell
Wonderful.
Me. It is trash French, and I love it.
Yeah, it's okay. So yeah. There's a lot of things about this, like...
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
There's a lot of things with the description of the song, because I'm engaged in conversation with my best friend Nick here, so I'm not, like, listening to it.
I sang it to you already.
It.
Hey, ho, hey, hey, ho.
Thanks, Nick. Oh, hey, voice
hey,
of an angel.
Ho, hey.
So this description here is... There's so many things I'm concerned about. Okay, so, like, So the song is called Lighter. And it's a cross genre collaboration.
No, it's just trash.
The one genre of trash. It's a collaboration between American country rap artist Jelly Roll and Mexican music star, no genre mentioned, Carine Leon. released on March 20th, 2026. Cool. So
yeah, I mean, it's like 3 weeks old. I've omitted a line here. What?
I've omitted a line here, though, that I think is terrifying.
Oh, okay, go on.
This is the first song released from the FIFA World Cup 2026.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Every city,
album.
Yeah, every city has their own song, yeah. I'm aware of this.
What?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What do you mean every city?
Yeah, like, pull it up. I remember, because I saw this the other day, all right, of like the 20...
List of FIFA World Cup songs and anthems.
Yeah, and some of them have very funny... some of them have like very funny artists. Like one of them, if I'm not mistaken, I think one of the venues has, which really just lays into the stupidity of this World Cup. I think one of them is done by Tech N9ne.
Okay, I'm on the Wikipedia page, for list of FIFA songs and anthems. Right?
Yes,
and. They've done the horrible thing of, because, you know, we know where the next few World Cups are going to be, right?
Yes.
Like, it's planned very far in advance. So this table, I was like, oh, it's organized with oldest anthem first, so I'm just going to whoosh down the table. And then I get to the horrifying of, like, 2034, Saudi Arabia anthem has yet to be released.
Oh,
so
damn.
I'm looking forward to Saudi Arabia's World Cup anthem. Yeah.
There's
okay.
So many.
Canada, Mexico,
but I remember seeing a thing the other day. Where was it? That like every venue is getting their own song. Like,
yes. Yeah, no, you're right. This is a very big square. And host city.
I swear to God.
No, you're right.
One of them is just in true.
It's very confusing because this is a list of songs based on their host city, but the host city song for Atlanta is written by someone called Dallas Austin, and I'm like, that's three American cities in a name in a row. I can't comprehend.
Wait, where have you found that? Because I found this list the other day, and now I can't find it again. And I'm
the Wikipedia page for FIFA songs and anthems.
FIFA songs and anthems. It has the host city.
So it has a big table of like lists, and you get.
Oh,
to
here I found it. Yeah, Dallas Austin, Dallas L. Yeah. Austin, American. Trey.
The most American man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. See, I was right. Kansas City, Tech N9ne.
Hell yeah.
However, San Francisco is getting Dan the Automator, who is one half of Deltron 3030.
Oh, yeah.
And Philadelphia, DJ Jazzy Jeff, which is a solid 90s selection.
He's great, though. I have so much patience for DJ. I've seen him live before.
That's amazing.
It's the most fun shit in the world.
Who the fuck is Dallas Austin?
He's got a Wikipedia page.
The thing that I find just so like the thing that I find so funny with this is that then whoever picked the Atlanta one is racist. Because they should have picked like 2 Chainz or something like that. Or like the thing that Atlanta is known for is rap music. You could have fucking gotten Lil.
He's not even from Atlanta.
No, exactly.
He's from Columbus, Georgia.
Like, or like getting like Lil Jon or something like that. Come on, even the fucking DNC realized to get Lil Jon to like represent Georgia when they like.
I don't think this is a very DNC coded event, to be perfectly
honest.
I mean,
football,
right?
In the U.S. is considered gay. So if they were smart.
But let's do the laundry list of if the Democrats were smart. I think there's a couple of things before we get to co-opt American soccer.
No, that would be right on their list right now.
That would be their number one priority.
It would not be the sense of like, oh yeah, you know,
drop Israel.
It's like, no, we need to find saucy tunes for the 2026 World Cup.
We need to abandon all sports bar football, which we are going to say is called football.
Yeah, yeah, they're gonna do the annoying American lib thing of like, oh, I call it football. It's like, just fucking like call it
the NFL sports ball. Hand egg.
Oh yeah, hand egg. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought you meant calling all sports ball.
Oh yeah. I think that would be like if the Democrats took that on as official position, a state senator would get shot. Like, just like the first, just they're calling it the most inconsequential American assassination. Hey, hey, welcome to your weekly Corner Spady. It's time for Africa. I'm here with my co-host and good friend Nick, who I've made laugh.
Hello, hello. Yeah.
To everyone listening, I'd like to celebrate a special day. Before we get into our main topic, we have to acknowledge the season, which is Happy Last Oil and Gas Shipment to Europe Day. Because cargo ships move at the speed of like electric bikes. I think the last one that made it through the Strait of Hormuz is meant to be docking somewhere probably in the Netherlands like today. So we get to enter the cool zone if you haven't already entered the cool zone. Because it's been a while since we've recorded an episode and things have been happening. And I think we should list some of those things.
No, what do you? The only thing that's been happening is the World Cup's coming up.
And everyone's got football fever.
Everyone's got football fever.
Oh God.
I am wondering. You know, Nick. You know, finger on the pulse of Europe. How quickly are we going to get Russian gas back?
Because
like there's... Europe is like going to, I mean, they've already, the thing that's already funny with then like the Ukraine thing is that then Trump has already dropped them.
Didn't Zelensky already basically say that like he's gotten some European officials or NATO officials saying to like let the gas flow?
Yeah, mostly been like Hungary and Slovenia, I think, which aren't like any surprises, or Slovakia, Slovakia is the one evil slow.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, yeah, it was the sense too that then like Trump also asked Ukraine to send like military assistance with Iran stuff.
Yeah, what do you got going on? You can. Okay, so we should talk about this. So Trump threatened to destroy a civilization and then was like, "Lol, JK, actually I capitulate completely." In what is trying to be spun as not a strategic loss for the United States, but is a strategic loss for the United States. And there was like the ceasefire agreement.
Wait, what? I'm having a stroke over here. What did you just say?
like Trump agrees to the ceasefire with Iran. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of clear to anyone with their head screwed on straight that this is America losing.
No, America's never lost a war ever. What are you talking about?
Of course.
It's just always just a slight inconvenience that we don't win.
Whenever anyone talks to me about Vietnam, I shut them down by playing the 2026 World Cup song very loudly. prevent them from speaking.
It is really funny though, in the sense that then the constant like hammering of how Americans see their own history. Like the idea that, that the Vietnam War is not seen as a loss is very funny to me.
I mean, I think that has been slowly changing, right? Because that was the thing. Like, I remember growing up in, like, I remember like the late 90s when basically I would encounter Americans who just did not accept that at all. And it feels like those Americans still exist, but they're getting fewer and fewer in number.
Yeah.
So naturally enough, in the face of ceasefire, we get the typical Israeli response, which is you cease and we fire. And they, reading about what they're doing in South Lebanon is distressing. Deeply, deeply upsetting. There's like basically no jokes. Chilling, is to say the least. Spain and Slovenia have already have renewed their calls to end the EU-Israeli association agreement. There were calls for it to be scrapped beforehand because of Gaza. But now they're like, Slovenia and Spain have come back say like, it should also be scrapped because of what, because of the bombing of like Beirut and South Lebanon. Yeah. Other consequences of this is the Financial Times did a great little article where they got a bunch of like White House staffers and NATO ambassadors kind of like off the record talking about how Europe's kind of this is not our war attitude has really has been like a possible death knell to NATO, you know, fingers crossed. For anyone who hasn't been keeping up with that, Spain and Italy are not letting the U.S. use their bases for anything related to the Middle East.
Even for everything else, though.
Yeah. It's like, again, it's like, what else do they got going on right now? Like,
well, it's like the sense, too, of like the hilarity of like the UK letting the US use their bases, but only for defensive stuff in the Middle East, which is just like, whatever so, that means.
Keir Starmer was weird. Or like, he capitulated immediately because he originally stated, don't use our air bases. And they got like spooked after the attack in
Cyprus. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're like, oh no, actually we can't commit to this because we're a small bean. And like he tried to make it seem like he was cool. He evoked like going into Iraq was a historic mistake for the UK and thus we don't want to do this. But then
I love 22 years later realizing that.
Oops. Yeah, within less than 24 hours, he gave the U.S. permission to use, it's called like it's Diego Garcia, that base in like the Chagos Islands in the Indian Ocean. I always get confused because it's like, why is there a base called Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean? And I'm like, age of exploration, whatever. Yeah, so there's that. And France is also another one where they're like doing it case by case. So basically to use any of the French bases, you just have to go through this long rigmarole of explaining why, and you'll probably get rejected from using it. So that's pretty substantial. Merz is pissed because he's like realized this is something that is going to drive a wedge into NATO. And he's like, no, no, we should let the Americans use our bases for whatever. And it will be fine. And yeah, I guess it's just like a lot of countries disagree with that. So that's fun. It's also apparently pissed off like everyone in America because they're just like, you know, we got Rubio's comments about like, we're going to pull out or whatever, as well as like some kind of unofficial comments being like, why are we even in Europe?
Yeah, I wonder that always as well.
Great question.
Well, great question. Why are you still here? This is like those things though of like, I don't know, like I always kind of feel the sense that, you know, the amount of pressure that then has been placed on Europe the last like what, 4 years? Because it's been not just, you know, Israel and all this, but you know,
Ukraine.
Well. of the amount of pressure being put on to NATO, and I feel that I'm just kind of the position that then it will exist forever. Like it's such a malleable organization that doesn't necessarily mean anything anymore. It's just ideologically it stands for capitalism, you know, like it stands for the sense of like, oh, well, you know, the Washington Consensus and all this stuff. It doesn't, like, there's never going to be like a, I mean, there might be joint NATO operations in the future, this and that and that. Like, it is kind of one of these organizations that even like the United States could like pull out of, and it could just still exist as like a, as like something like the UN that just like has a name but doesn't do anything.
So this is like Yanis Varoufakis's kind of idea of like how he thinks the EU would end, because he's like, Yanis kind of comes around in this like Brexit era, becomes like popular again during the Brexit era, and like talks about like, I actually don't think the EU will go away dramatically in that way that you envision, but it would become more like the CSTO in Russia, where it still exists on paper but just does fucking nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a place to put like a political fail son.
Like, give them a NATO will exist as just like a military Erasmus, you know? It's like, oh, hey, ooh, you know, we're going to send some Germans to Lithuania and they're going to go there and get hand jobs instead of, you know, jacking each other off in Germany. You know? Like, it is.
That's fun.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing is that then it can kind of like, it is just, I mean, like, sure, fine, you know. No European country actually had to increase their defense spending to the 5%. They just did it because they want. Like, the United States would not have punished them in any imaginable way whatsoever, because they've already been Spain doing it matter what. You know, the sense of like, oh, we're gonna raise tariffs on like fucking beef jerky and fucking horse semen or whatever the U.S. exports.
The other thing was like, he was doing that anyway.
No, exactly. Like, it was going to happen regardless. Is that then whatever, you know, people be like, oh, you know, we had to do X, Y, and Z because Trump was going to do this. It's like, no, he was going to do that regardless. If you did 10% of GDP spending to NATO, he still would have done this, because Trump just is a moron that doesn't understand how anything in the world functions. You know, he is like, him and his administration have proven within the last, like, you know, whatever half year that we've had of this, of that then, they're all morons that then are just like, I mean, psychopathically driven to death on end, like just to any degree. And it like, they can do whatever they want. Europe is just cucked. You know, even, okay, yeah, sure, we're getting to the sense of like, you know, Spain and Slovakia or Slovenia saying then, you know, oh, we're sad about this. But at the end of the day, it's like they're still within like U.S. sphere of influence. If Europe was not cucked and smart, they would just like latch themselves onto China for dear life and tell the U.S. to go fuck themselves.
Yeah, yeah. I think the issue is, and I think I'll reiterate this, of like, I do think there's a kind of desire within European circles to do that, or do a version of that where they've built the narrative that they're like independent and strong and sovereign, rather than just leaning on another world power. I think there's an urge to do that, but at the same time, they want to do that without rocking the boat somehow.
It is clearly impossible at this time.
Yes.
You know, and then what? If Europe like decouples itself from the US, what is the United States going to let off all their nukes that then are in Europe? I mean, like, they like what?
I mean, I think it's more like it's market stuff, right? It's like they have all their investments and all that kind of, and they want, it's what happens when we're ruled by rich people.
Yeah. It's like, stupid. There's always like, I mean, like I've gone from being like, I wouldn't, optimistic is I guess a bit giving me too much credit, but in the sense of like, oh yeah, you're right. Like the sense of, oh, well, you know, the European, you know, expert class knows that we should be getting closer to China. It's like, well, that doesn't fucking matter, because you have moronic neoliberal ideologues that then just, the mask is off, they're fascists, like a Friedrich Merz type, and they're fine to that. They're like, because they don't seem to understand that they are evangelicals when it comes to them, the preservation of capitalism and all this fucking shit. They're fine with going down with it. You know, they think that that's a logical solution for them, even though they don't realize that that is a fundamentalist position that they are holding.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I would push back on that would be that it's not that they're actually ideologically capitalist, although I do think that they are. I think because the capitalist argument would be in favor of pivoting and getting out of what is this clearly disastrous.
Yeah.
Because it's just we're going to lose so much fucking money.
Like the Merkel neoliberal purist position would probably be that if she was still here.
Yeah. I think they're ideologically Atlanticist. The Atlanticism is becoming this thing that okay. So one of the things I remember having to explain to someone at I can't remember where, I was drunk at a party, but talking about how capitalism and liberalism for the longest time went unnamed, right? It was just the way things were done. There wasn't really people who were advocating for it or did it didn't really give it a name. And it was just oh, this is the natural order. This is great. This is just, it's default, right? This is the way the world works, blah, blah, blah. We still hear those kind of things today. And I think there's a similar thing happening with Atlanticism where we are now starting to say Atlanticism. We are now starting to acknowledge this ideology that actually had a stranglehold over the continent, that the expert class did not realize was their default position. Without they're basically, they've never interrogated it, and they just really think that you put all chips on America, things will work out. And I think there's just a handful of European politicians that are maybe maybe we don't put all the chips on America. Maybe we put some somewhere else.
It is the sense of the. I'm just still so flabbergasted of the sense of that. Then we are in the most mask off era of Americanism, and people are surprised that a country founded by pedophile racists is still run by pedophile racists. What would the founding fathers do? I don't know. What would Benjamin Franklin, notorious rapist pedophile, do in this situation?
Yeah, but we thought that would go away, presidents identifying as Scots-Irish or whatever. We just thought that would become out of mode or something. That would be fine.
Yeah, sure, fine. Anyway, onto the other pressing matters of the week for the rest of the episode.
I do. Yeah, I think we should. I just need to list some of the consequences that we are going to be facing in Europe.
Shut up! This is all right, Kieran. I'm sorry. New Spatey rule. Positive vibes. All right.
The newest rule. Okay. All right. ACI Europe, which represents European Union airports, have basically stated there's about 3 weeks of jet fuel left.
We're going to use it all to melt steel beams, baby.
We're doing a scientific experiment to test 9/11. Polish and Nordic airlines have already started cutting routes. Airports in southern Italy have already basically stopped functioning. Greece, Italy, and Spain are intervening on VAT for transport providers. Slovenia and Slovakia have brought in fuel rationing. The EU Commission has suggested some energy emergency proposals, such as work from home directives, car-free Sundays in major cities, and reducing all speed limits across the continent by 10 kilometers. I'd love to see the German guy reaction to that.
Oh, we're gonna have a German man commit seppuku in the middle of Friedrichstrasse, an already car free street.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's been global consequences as well. A friend of mine was in Sri Lanka recently, where he was just yeah, yeah, there's like a QR code. They've already moved to a 4-day week. There's a QR code system for like signing in to get permission to get fuel. So like it's this ridiculous system already put in place. Thailand has basically stopped fishing because the cost of taking your boat into the water is no longer worth how much they get paid for their fish. So like, yeah, shit like that's starting to happen all over the world.
Iran was so smart.
Yeah.
That is also like you like,
oh. It's also, we got to really point out, so were the Americans at one point, because like, it's not like this isn't aggressively well documented. The Americans have wanted to attack Iran for years, but then every strategy paper, the Pentagon or whatever, White House, or like even that fucking psychopath that was in the Trump cabinet for a bit during the first term, was like John Bolton or something, like has always known, like it's always written on every strategy paper, they'll close the Strait of Hormuz and that will fuck over the world.
Yeah. And then the United States thinking that they could win their first, get their first post-World War II victory. Just.
Yeah. Hey. It's got, hey, if you roll enough dice, you'll get double sixes eventually. Like, it's. Just keep rolling.
I don't think. It was all constantly just like, I mean, like obviously the United States attacking Iran, not funny, but just like the level of stupidity of the administration was funny. Of just like, we're going to do a land invasion of Iran, a country that is all mountain.
Yeah, it'd be grand. Hey, Nick. We did a land invasion of a country that was all mountains. It was called Afghanistan. That went great. Well,
yeah, exactly. Phenomenally.
Who's in charge now? It's the Americans, surely. There's also, like, I should also say this, like, the country I'm in at the moment has been brought to a standstill because of, like, these quite reactionary but still happening farmers' protests that have, like, blocked motorways and all that good stuff off the back of, like, fuel increases. So... yeah, there was Chad bringing the army in. Anyway.
What's the Irish army like?
It's a kite that says fuck off.
we're gonna angrily fly one propeller plane above them.
So I should say, like, this started on Monday and it's still going on, right? Like, streets in Dublin are closed. And it's like, it's a protest organized by people who have nothing but contempt from protesters. So they think the point of a protest is to be annoying, because they got their idea of what a protest is from like a reactionary Facebook group. Anyway, on, I think it was Thursday, this was like the fourth or third day of this protest continuing, the government was like, we're thinking about, hey, like, if you continue this, we're going to send in the army in 3 days' time. I was like, oh, so you're just going to let them do this for like a week before you intervene. It's a very good threat. Yeah, they're like, last I heard, they were going to like the ports to stop shipments coming in. Like, there's petrol stations in Cork that have run out of fuel already. So, okay. Anyway. We should get on to the main topic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome to the electoralism episode. We here at Cornish Beatty GmbH Heavy Industries podcast division are giving you permission to lib out as we talk about elections. two elections in particular that I want to focus on. I'm going to talk about the Danish elections and then also, but first, the Slovenian elections. Because... Oh boy.
When I like was reading talking... the notes of the Slovenian election, I thought that you were joking. Because it was like, why is this so much effort for a country that no one cares about?
Yeah, right. So one title we can give Slovenia is the most easily bought politics on the continent. If you want to construct an influence game in Slovenia, or like in the EU, Slovenia is a great country. Malta is small, but they've got like a two-party system on incredible lockdown. Entering their politics is probably too difficult.
Oh, and Malta has corruption, like criminal, like not just all corruption, of course, is criminal, but criminal as in criminal enterprises involved in corruption.
Oh, yeah, you're not weaseling out.
You're like, not, yeah, you're going to end up in the middle of, like, you know, your car getting fucking exploded or some shit.
Yeah, yeah, that's way too, like, material. Yeah. There's no way you can, like, do that from pulling this out of my ass, an office in Tel Aviv. Just... Yeah. I haven't read ahead
what
of the notes,
yeah, what does Eurovision and the Slovene elections have in common?
Right? It's probably the same fucking department as Mossad or whatever. It's like, this is our Eurovision Slovenian department.
I mean, it is probably harder to rig the Eurovision votes than it is a Slovene national election.
There's more,
you know, things going on with the Eurovision.
Yeah, yeah. And also, we're joking here. They're kind of joking. But also, Slovenian people have their own agency, and we should talk about that.
And that's 40 billion euros to Israel, please.
All right. So, headline of this is that Janša narrowly lost to the incumbent Prime Minister Golub. If you want to hear about Janša, a man that we kind of think perfectly encapsulates the, like, modern history of the nation of Slovenia, you should listen to our couple-year-old episode on Janša at this point, when we last talked about him when he was in power. Since then, should mention that he's fallen out of power, and in came a relatively new party headed by a guy called Golub. Golub is quite young, and should say, like, he's kind of decent. He's, like, he's already made public statements against Israel. That's just, like, this is also one of the things we should say about Slovenia. They're very tiny, but their politics on this issue is quite good. Spain gets a lot of credit because they're big and people take notice, but Slovenia is usually, like, the first to make some of these statements. They were the country that actually, like, organized the, like, Eurovision boycott, for instance. So Golub needs to form a coalition now, which is tricky. His popularity waned due to failing to deliver on pension reforms and healthcare improvements, which cost him the youth vote in particular. Janša campaigned on gutting everything and lowering taxes. He wants a slap election now in a couple of months due to supposed irregularities in the vote. There doesn't seem to be any irregularities. What irregular stuff happened in this election probably benefited Janša. There is also a third block that I want to talk about, because I think you'll enjoy the third block. This is what the Slovenian media is interested in particularly. And international media is kind of ignoring this third block. They're basically like what you would call like never Janša conservatives in a similar sense to a never Trumpers. And they may end up being kingmakers, which is a problem for us, lovely little communists, because they've specifically stated they want to rule out any coalition with Levica, the relatively decent left-wing party that's a junior coalition partner in Slovenia. First, we've got Janša's former foreign minister, one Anze Logar. He's formed an anti-culture war party that is basically... which is basically Janša's SDS again, but with the added flavor of regionalism, of just like, let's stop centralizing the country around Ljubljana and let's acknowledge that like all the manufacturing that still happens in this country happens in the like one other city we have. criticisms of him is that he basically could just be Janšaism without Janša.
What?
I was reading him...
That's crazy to think of. You mean the never Janša-ers are just the same thing?
Yeah, but like I'm in charge.
Yeah.
Like, isn't that cool?
Where have I seen this before? I don't know.
Well, where will you see it again when we get into the next election? People like Mladina wrote some articles basically saying that like the benefit of Janša is that people come out and protest Janša because he's like a personally divisive character. But like, they don't think Anze Lagar, if he was ever in charge, would like inspire those same protests, even though he would probably do a bunch of the same shit. Yep. Then the other party in this third block is not really a party, but a three-party coalition that have self-described themselves as like an EPP-style Christian democracy center-right pro-European conservatives, including one party that's new and kind of fresh-faced. So they're getting a bit of like, ooh, you're young. Then in the third block, in this category, there is a party called Resni.ca, which is a link, but I haven't dared not click on it yet. They attack Janša from the right on his antiist, like on the whole, like they attack him because Janša tries to pretend he's anti-establishment. Go back and listen to our episode about Janša. He's been in the country since it fucking began. He is Mr. Two Damn Slovenia. And also, the other thing they attack him on is being the other thing they attack him on is that they, as a party, are anti-vax, and Janša did, you know, at least oversee the vaccine rollout in Slovenia because he was in charge back then.
It's so funny how this is still such a big driver within the international right. Like,
yeah,
it really is. Like, it's like they have driven themselves to like Nazi insanity, where it's like they are like the Jews control the world, and they're force vaccinating you, and yeah, the amount of like right wing slop that I get on Instagram that is just like this bullshit, old school type of like anti-Semitic bullshit. It's worrying, but it is also just like, oh, like people are really dumb.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, go on holiday and then like they're playing a song that was like a banger 10 years ago and you're like, oh, you guys are still doing this.
Wow.
Eurovision 2026, baby.
Yeah, right. All right, so then we have to talk about Black Cube. What is Black Cube, you might be asking?
I don't know. That sounds really sinister.
Yeah.
Wonder where it comes from.
Black Cube is a private intelligence firm founded in 2010 with offices in Tel Aviv, London, and Madrid. It was founded by Dan Zarella and Avi Yanos, both former members of the IDF.
Oh, wow. Crazy. Why does, like, Israel name their stuff just the most evil shit ever? Like,
yeah.
Did you see, like, the new operation name that they have for bombing southern Lebanon? It's, like, Operation Total Darkness or something like that.
Christ. Come on.
It's like the sense of how like Saddam Hussein's sons really liked Star Wars, but they really liked the Empire, and they're like, oh yeah, we are the bad guys.
Now, I think you might be rushing to judgment here, Nick. Maybe you should hear about some of Black Cube's past work before you
judge
their morality. Most notably, they were hired by Harvey Weinstein to monitor journalists and female accusers using operatives and fabricated identities to harass them.
Oh, cool. Because they're feminists, right? Like, it was to protect women, right?
Yeah, so other clients of Black Cube, so innocently named, is they've also targeted the critics of Viktor Orban in Hungary. And they've also been convicted of spying on an anti-corruption chief in Romanian politics. They were like convicted in absentia, like the two founders of this group. So they didn't show up to their trial, but like, yeah, if they set foot in Romania, they get arrested.
Cool.
Yeah. So glad they're like still kicking, still interfering in politics. And this was like So what they actually did was they wiretapped the offices of a handful of like Golub's like colleagues, basically like politicians in his party, found some evidence of corruption and leaked those tapes to like during the election cycle. Sova, Slovenia's like intelligence agency, was like, yeah, it was them. They flew in on private jet on these dates. They went to these hotel rooms. They bugged them, etc. So, like, yeah, we can pinpoint and name them exactly. And it seems like the vast majority of the public in Slovenia recognize that this was a influence campaign to benefit Janša. And thus, like, Janša got a fair amount of votes, but probably just because people like Janša's whole deal, rather than this really moving the needle for him. It might have probably hurt him more than anything. Interestingly enough, for, like, EU stuff, is Golub has then invoked an EU rule. Let's see. He wrote directly to Ursula von der Leyen, calling this a clear hybrid threat against the European Union, and he urged the Commission to investigate and refer the matter to the European Center for Democratic Resilience, which is a organization that the EU made, I believe, the beginning of 2025, and specifically named, like in the opening speech of like this institution being created, specifically named China and Russia as countries that could interfere with EU elections. So, very curious to see if this will actually like be acted.
Israel's allowed, again, it's same thing with the US. Israel and the United States are allowed to interfere in any elections that they want to because it's their right to do so. They're good. Mm-hmm. They're good boys and girls in the European eyes. So they're just doing it to protect European interests from bad interests like Russia and China. It's, I mean, yeah, it is very, it's the funny thing too, because it's like for the amount of like, you know, I mean, like, the best example of this has been, like, European and American intervention in, like, Georgia, right? Like, to the point where then, like, Georgian dream wins, like, questionable election for other reasons, not just in the sense of, like, Russian interference, but pretty much more American and European interference, for that matter. And then you do the whole weird thing where they parade around a fake president, you know, for like, oh, here's the actual winner. And it's like, if that is not election interference, where you're just completely like, you know, I mean, look at them. I mean, it's just, it's like Juan Guaido's forever, right? A man, or what's her name? Maldonado or whatever, who are, you know, a Nobel Peace Prize champion of, you know, making her own organization to then take a look at her own elections. Yeah. To then crown her prince or princess might be worse than whatever Maduro was doing. Like,
yeah, yeah.
But trust me, bro. So fucking stupid.
So it's stupid. I also want to say that, like, we focused on it a little bit, but, like, and also, like, we're guilty of doing this, but the international media's coverage of, like particularly thinking of, like, The Guardian's Europe edition on Slovenia election purely frames this in geopolitical terms. You know, the world, the grand game of chess, blah, blah, blah. If you look exclusively at like Slovenian language sources, it's not how they thought of this election, because of course they didn't. That would have been psychotic. The main issues seem to be like a cost of living situations, healthcare and pensions, as big drivers for like the Slovenian electorate, rather than the Guardian said it was like a Trump backlash, and like I don't see it personally. Anyway, you need to move on with the last couple of minutes of our episode. We need to talk about Denmark, because every kind of closeted right wing a commentator on this continent is on suicide watch, because Mette Frederiksen's I can out-racist the racists political strategy has You know, obvious to us idiots with a podcast, run into the inevitable brick wall.
Why do I not just vote for the right wingers?
Yeah, exactly.
Damn, crazy. Wow. Never in a million years would have seen that one coming.
No, absolutely not. We should talk about this because basically it seems like Mette Frederiksen thought that like the Greenland crisis would be enough to propel her back into office and how she handled that. And I do want to talk about that a little bit because to me personally, it reminds me of like Ireland's 2020 elections where Fine Gael basically thought that they could ride how they handled Brexit into being elected again. And then it turns out, and I think this is probably similar for a lot of the Danes, of like the mood is, yeah, you did all right, but like you did what we expect every party in your position to have done. Like you did what we think everyone should have done. Therefore, we don't view it as particularly like special that you did this. And it didn't work for them. So, okay, before I get into the details here, talking about Danish electoral politics makes me feel like I'm having a stroke because...
Because they do that weird... No, go on.
So, first of all, cute thing I like about Danish politics, and I think it's great, and I think more countries should do this, is they have the one letter representation for each party. I think that's cute branding, all right? But then they've also decided to have official English translations of their names, their party names, which are not translations of their Danish names, which are fucking insane. So for instance... Okay.
It'll be like the thing of like... an American movie that then will have a German title or something like that. That's just not remotely the same.
It's not what it is. For instance, is that we have what international media and their official English name calls the Green Left is like, I think is SF, is translated as SF. And that's basically like the Social Feminist Party or Socialist People's Party or something like that is like, the actual translation of the Danish word for it. So, All right. But let's get into it. The Social Democrats, A, as it's abbreviated to, which again, I think comes from something to do with like Arbeiten, like it's A for worker. Yeah. Mette Frederiksen's party got their worst result since 1901, which is not great. Denmark's one of them old European countries, like the UK. They got 38 seats. They lost 12. I think it's the largest loss. Their coalition partners also lost seats. The issues of this election, which I thought were kind of interesting, first was like a wealth tax thing. Frederiksen wants to bring back a wealth tax, and I think that's kind of positively received by the public, but then at the same time it's like not enough for people to like your whole party. The other one that I found interesting was a big issue this election was pig farming.
Okay, go on. I'm curious of what this has to do with Denmark.
We're still adorable little peasants over here. So pig farming in Denmark is abusive. Takes up half of the available land in Denmark. Pollutes all of the water. And is only 2% of GDP. But like all farming on this continent, all of our politicians are completely beholden to them. And they're small little beans who we must never offend. So I think... I don't know how it became an issue, but I think everyone was like, hey, these guys are clearly monsters. Stop being nice to them. So farmer
so
politics.
What was her proposal to pig farming then?
Just like kill all pig farm. I don't know what it was, but like apparently this was it. I think it was one of those things of like there was like public pressure for them to be addressed, and then like the parties just weren't. So it was like, it was more like a people's issue rather than like we put it into the manifesto for this election or whatever. So Fredriksson has resigned, although she's almost certainly coming back. The two biggest winners of this election are the Green Left, or SF, annoyingly, and Dansk Folkeparti, which we will talk about them in a second, because me and Nick probably remember them. The SF, the Green Left, are for the first time the second largest party in the government, so that's huge. And they've already stated they're happy to go into government, but they've drawn some like red line issues, which would be the expansion of the welfare state and accelerating the green transition. Dansk Folkeparti, who me and Nick might remember from the Eurovibes Twitch stream, where they gave us the jump scare with the 9/11 video. And that was one of their campaigns.
Oh my God. Yeah. I forgot about that. I was trying to think of in the sense of like, what is this? Like a right wing drunk driving party or something like that. But no. Okay, cool. That's also very normal.
Oh yeah. And you know what? They've become more normal. being one of the few, but growing number of parties on this continent that are actively campaigning on the term remigration. So yeah, also massive Zionists, love Israel. We must defend Israel at all costs. Dansk Folkeparti, the Danish People's Party.
The more I learn about Europe, the more I think that Stalin was not mean enough to Europe.
Yeah. Like, we gotta shut this shit
down.
None
of this should exist. Like, Denmark shouldn't even exist, actually. You know, I am unironically in support of the EU-SSR.
And maybe if they're good, they'll get like a Danes Republic or something like that, where they can have their
own
language.
Yeah, but just like, you know, it's like the thing of like, I'm going to keep the like church on a leash sort of thing that Stalin did. You know, yes. This party shouldn't exist. Like, none of this should exist.
Nick, it's going to get worse. I promise.
Oh, I know it's going to get worse. I know. That's why accelerate the EU-SSR and make me the, you know, European gay Stalin.
The head of the Danish Republic. Clearly not, you know, Danish person.
Clearly not Danish person, but I'm like low-key Danish with it.
Yeah. Anyway, the blue bloc and the red bloc, as they're kind of known, the like natural grouping of like left and right wing parties, are both short of a parliamentary majority, which then leads us to the moderates, the party of the current foreign minister, Iwan Lars Løkke Rasmussen, as being the most likely kingmaker. He gained notoriety with people by being the guy who was like chugging cigarettes after meeting J.D. Vance during the Greenland crisis, if you remember that video.
Being cool, you mean?
Yeah. Now, he's received a lot of airtime personally because being the foreign minister during the Greenland crisis, so that's kind of helped his personal platform, and that's huge because the party is not good. The party was formed in 2022, and it was a split from Venstre, which is your typical right-wing party, you're like your center-right, your CDU equivalent in Denmark, where it was basically, what if I had Venstre again, but I'm in charge? It's kind of like the motivating factor for Lars Løkke Rasmussen here. Also, want to point out, they named the party the Moderates from the hit Danish TV show Borgen, which is basically Danish West Wing. And the Moderates was a fictitious version of the Social Democrats.
Super cool that Denmark is also libbing out in that regard as well.
And this is not like a conjecture thing of like, hey, this political party called the Moderates came around after the TV show Borgen had like wrapped and it was centered around a political party called the Moderates. He stated in an interview, he got the idea for the name of the party from the TV show Borgen.
Yeah.
But like another benefit of his own party is he's not in the conventional blue bloc and he's not in the conventional red bloc. He basically said he was making a version of Venstre that could work with the red bloc, right? So you're kind of, hey, we've seen this before, like anti-culture war. The partition is the thing that's really ruining our politics, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm not a left winger or a right winger. I'm actually a right winger.
Yeah. They also, this election campaigned on some pretty heinous center right bullshit. They used the language of local health hubs, which just rings alarm bells for me, like of like you're going to Zoom call your doctor kind of shit. Don't trust that. Kind of seems to be like a way of destroying any like rural healthcare in the country. They also floated the idea of the part-time pension, where it's kind of like your halfway house between raising the retirement age of what if we gave you a little bit of your pension so you could have like a part-time job for those like first 10 years of what's meant to be your retirement or something like that. It's to keep old people working longer because Denmark, like a lot of European countries, has a labor crisis. The party, despite its short existence, already has a handful of scandals. Now, this party has existed since 2022. We're on year four of this fucking Borgen-ass party existing. In 2024, there were complaints of an abusive work environment in the party, citing sexism and bullying, as well as severe punishing towards anyone who was perceived as disloyal, right? Standard, like, I get it. You're a Maoist and you're trying to start a party in Denmark. We got to do, like, I don't know. Just like struggle sessions. In 2022, a newly elected MP, a one Christian Klauskopf, had to resign before being sworn in because he lied on his CV, claiming he had leadership roles in companies that didn't exist.
I don't see the problem with that one. All right. When you're a bullshit neoliberal party and you do the bullshit neoliberalism, you should get promoted. You should be made the head candidate in that sense. Like, you're playing the game smarter than everyone else. You win.
Yep. Yep. In 2023, another MP, a one Mike Villa von Neske, age 27, was forced out of the party after he was found to be dating a 15-year-old girl.
I was expecting something a little bit different when he has a fucking like Fon und Sue-ass name, but actually no, I wasn't.
No, it's Fon Eska. It's not like V O N. It's one word. I think he's like an Italian.
Oh, it's one word. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was expecting like a corruption scandal or something like that, not like pedophilia.
Yeah. Well, also in 2023. We had another MP, John Stevenson, age 64, was found to have sent flirtatious and inappropriate messages to a 19-year-old member of the youth party. So, yeah.
I mean, that one's legal, but...
Well, actually, due to the age of consent in Denmark... Finesca is very quick to tell people that was also legal, but it was just against party rules.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I always forget that then it's like Europe has like countries where it's like age of consent's like 13 or something like that.
Yeah, but a lot of those, the thing that a lot of people miss about those is that they have additional rules that it's like, yeah, a 13-year-old can have sex with like another, like a 14-year-old, not with like someone in their 30s.
No, yeah, fine.
I only have one last little point to bring up about these two particular MPs is, you know, they're both kicked out of the moderate parties because you know, they were doing some not so moderate stuff, guys, eh? The moderate position is to date a 30-year-old. That's the, no matter what age you are. But then, so they were forced out of the party, but both of these MPs then kept their seats. And as independents within the Danish party, kept working with the moderates, including, you know, the 60-something-year-old guy who was flirting with the youth party member, even having, like, personal meetings with Lars Løkke Rasmussen. So, like, ah, yeah. So there's a lot about the Greenland crisis that is, like I said, boosted his personal, like, persona onto the Danish public to the great benefit of hiding what the rest of the party is like. Yeah, because the guy just like huffing cigarettes in response to like being in a room with J.D. Vance is very relatable. It's just I didn't expect him to be friends with like pedophiles.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. Just yeah. as it's Europe. It's Europe, again. Baby. It's wild into the sense too of the further that we go down. I mean, still back to my previous thesis, right? The further that we then go down the like Atlanticist pro-capitalist line of everything, it's just like it is just like, you know what? It is just the eternal Epstein cabal, just in different yeah. versions and whatnot.
Oh yeah, I was posting on Twitter there recently for my sins.
Ooh, living a little, living in the past, Kieran, trying to.
I know.
I deleted Blue Sky, so it's fine. It's fair. I get it. Like,
yeah,
you know.
I still enjoy Blue Sky. It's just funny. Like, I'll do the same post on both, and then like I was responding to like Rubio saying like, "Oh, we're gonna pull our military bases out of Europe," and I just went with like, "Oh no, who will rape? Who will sexually assault the locals now?" Was basically like my response to that. And then, you know, on Twitter, I get like that goes viral on Twitter, but then I get a bunch of people responding, be like, oh, like all the like Pakistanis you imported or whatever, right? And just to piss off all of them, I added them to a public list that just was called Epstein supporters. Like, no, no comment, nothing they could do about it. I'm just like, that list.
That sounds website. Way more fun than Blue Sky. Blue Sky is just like you'll skeet something, you'll get one like, and then you'll get like a lib or like an ultra leftist doing a well actually at you.
Yeah. I mean, both platforms at the moment seem dire for like I've been including the like leftist discourse. Blue Sky is like Irish Blue Sky is figuring out like how do we handle this like fuel farmer petty bourgeois protest thing that's happening in this country, right? And then over I was checking on Twitter as like a bunch of people with like who claim to be like Leninists and Marxists and stuff are discovering the Falklands War and realizing that both sides of it were probably bad, because it's like this thing of like you get these ones who are like, you know, everything Britain does is bad, and then the people will come along and point out like there was like a U.S. puppet military junta in charge of Argentina just doing like a land grab. Like, this is not like a woke government to support.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's my two idiot dads fighting each other.
Or, as the Falklands War was described at the time by a French commenter, two bald men fighting over a comb. that's a quote I remember. Anyway, with that, that was your weekly Corner Spady. You can catch us on the bonus feed. Ciao, ciao.
Bye-bye.